Good evening. The 2020 election takes a new direction after the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And a leak of thousands of reports from a financial crimes agency shows the massive reach of money laundering and the failure of the United States and others to do anything to halt it. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Monday, September 21st, 2020. As crowds gathered at the United States Supreme Court in Washington, laying flowers and mourning the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, President Trump promised to appoint a replacement by this weekend.
As we meet tonight, our nation mourns the loss of a legal giant, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Her landmark rulings, fierce devotion to justice, and her courageous battle against cancer inspire all Americans. You may agree, you may not disagree with her, but she was an inspiration to a tremendous number of people. I say all Americans. Justice Ginsburg's close relationship with a friend of ours, a friend of mine, Justice Scalia, is also a powerful reminder that we can disagree on fundamental issues while treating each other with decency, dignity, and respect. Our thoughts and prayers are with her family. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Article 2 of our Constitution says the president shall nominate justices of the Supreme Court.
And that's President Trump. But Democratic candidate Joe Biden says the GOP is flip-flopping after blocking President Obama's choice 4 years ago, using an excuse that an election was near. Biden named South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who 4 years ago famously said, "Use my words against me."
The current chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who at the time said, and I'll quote verbatim, here's what he said, quote, "I want you to use my words against me if there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it might be, make the nomination." Continue the quote. "And you could use my words against me, and you'd be absolutely right." End of quote. That's what Republicans said when Justice Scalia passed away, about 9 months before Election Day that year. Now, having lost Justice Ginsburg less than 7 weeks before election this year, after Americans have already begun to cast their vote, it's estimated that up to 40% of Americans will have voted by October 1st, but at least 30%, tens of millions. And you can't unring the bell. Having made this their standard, going to serve their interests, they cannot just 4 years later change course when it doesn't serve their ends. Look, I'm not being naive. I'm not speaking to President Trump, who will do whatever he wants. I'm not speaking to Mitch McConnell, who will do what he wants and he does. I'm speaking to those Republicans out there, Senate Republicans, who know deep down what is right for the country and consistent with the Constitution.
And that's presidential candidate Joe Biden. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has promised to vote on the nominee before the election, 43 days away, claiming Democrats are the ones at fault.
President Trump's nominee for this vacancy will receive a vote on the floor of the Senate. Now, already, some of the same individuals who tried every conceivable dirty trick to obstruct Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh are lining up to proclaim the third time will be the charm. The American people are about to witness an astonishing parade of misrepresentations about the past, misstatements about the present, and more threats against our institutions from the same people the same people who've already been saying for months, well before this, already been saying for months, they want to pack the court.
And that's Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer accused McConnell of a power grab.
By every modicum of decency and honor, Leader McConnell and the Republican Senate majority have no right to fill it. No right. In the final few weeks, sensing her failing health, Justice Ginsburg told her family that it was her, quote, most fervent wish that she not be replaced until a new president is installed. That was Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dying wish, her most fervent wish, that she should not be replaced until a new president is installed. The Senate Republican majority should have no problem adhering to Justice Ginsburg's dying wish. Leader McConnell held a Supreme Court vacancy open for nearly a year in order to, quote, give the people a voice in selecting a Supreme Court justice. I just heard the remarks of the Republican leader. It's obvious why he is so, so defensive. This is what Leader McConnell said in 2016, mere hours after the death of Justice Scalia. Quote, his words, the American people should have a voice in the selection of their next Supreme Court justice. Therefore, this vacancy shall not be filled until we have a new president.
And that's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a child of Brooklyn and graduate of James Madison High School, along with Chuck Schumer. Borough President Eric Adams held a memorial for Ginsburg at the Brooklyn Municipal Building over the weekend, a building he wants named after Ginsburg. Brooklyn Assembly member Joanne Simon listed the reasons why RBG was so important to women.
Before her work, you couldn't get a mortgage without a male cosigner. You couldn't get a checking account without a male cosigner. You couldn't start a business without a male cosigner. You couldn't get a credit card without a male cosigner. You couldn't obtain a business loan without a male cosigner. You couldn't get a job without gender-based discrimination. You couldn't get birth control without having to obtain your husband's permission. You now have a right not to be forced to provide proof of sterilization in order to obtain employment. Because, of course, the biggest fear that every employer talked about was whether or not you might get pregnant. Because we don't want that to happen. We don't want women in the workplace because they might get pregnant and have children. So on so many ways she led, because she was not only a woman and a lawyer, but she was a mother. And she paved the path for so many of us, for all of us. And one of the things she taught us early on by taking cases where the plaintiff was actually a male is that men are disadvantaged by gender discrimination against women. That if a woman has benefits, for example, from serving in the military, her husband should be able to claim the same spousal benefits that a woman could claim if the male was the person serving in the military.
Assembly member Joanne Simon was followed by public advocate Jumani Williams.
I just want to give her a round of applause for the awesomeness of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG. And I'm very proud to tell everybody she's from Brooklyn. We know that already. You know, a lot of folks kind of speak about her, but at the same time are trying to destroy all of the things that she was about. And so I'm not going to keep you long, but I want to make sure that we are doing the best we can to keep the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg alive. And that's meaning, even if you're tired, you have to keep pushing forward and fighting for those who are the least among us and fighting for those who haven't got equality and equity. Everybody here knows that she fought a good fight, trying to make it through, trying to make it, I would guarantee you, at least to the end of the year. It was amazing to see what she was able to go through, and it was just the tenacity and the fire of fighting. And I know when she got to where she's going, someone said, job well done. So my hope now is that, I know we're in a scary time. I know there's a little bit of darkness, But my hope is that we all can be the light moving forward. We can take some of the light that she left us to protect those who need protection and to disagree where we need to disagree and keep pushing forward. She did that for so many of us. Yes, for women, but for all of us. Let's make sure we don't forget the next generation, because she didn't forget about us. Peace and blessings. Love and light to everyone.
And after Jumaane Williams spoke, Borough President Eric Adams said it's time, past time, to rename the Brooklyn Municipal Building after Ginsburg.
But now we must demand that the mayor of the city of New York no longer delay and put her name on the municipal building to show the respect for her legacy. It has taken too long. She should have seen it while she was alive. We don't want her to have her flowers after she transitioned. Before she is buried, we need to put her name on this building, and it should be done right away. She represents what's great about this borough of Brooklyn and what's great about the greatest race alive, and that's the human race. And I join the narrative in the call. Don't make the appointment until the next president of the United States is put in place. We have a battle to do. This is such an important and significant moment for our country. This is a pivotal period of how we're going to define ourselves as human beings in this country. We've gone down a dark path with a dark person, with a dark narrative, and want to destroy what we have become. And I'm going to tell you something, Brooklynites. I'm no longer concerned about him. I'm concerned about what's becoming of us. We become mean to each other. We no longer could even disagree. We don't engage in conversations. We don't talk to each other. We tweet out nasty statements and comments. We demonize each other. Hate crime is on the rise. We have more military armament than the history of our country in different parts of this country. Our babies don't have to grow up in this country. This is her legacy. This is what she fought for. That is why we're here today. And I call on all of us to ensure our country becomes what her legacy represents. So I thank you for coming out today.
And that's Borough President Eric Adams. And Mayor de Blasio had kind words for Ginsburg at his daily briefing.
Something that we feared would happen, but I think we all have had such profound respect for Justice Ginsburg that we always believed she would find a way to keep fighting through no matter what was thrown at her. And God bless her for the fight she fought in so many different ways in her life. I have to tell you, I don't know the details of all the pain she was going through, all the challenges she was going through, not just in recent months, but in recent years. But the fight that she waged on behalf of all of us was unbelievable, just miraculous. And what a saint who walked among us, because she kept fighting. She kept fighting to live, to serve, to protect us all, no matter what. And that strength, that tenacity, gives us the possibility that justice may be served and that she may be replaced by someone worthy of holding her seat. But remember, that strength, that tenacity, it's who she was and why we admired her so much. But it also comes from her roots in this city, proud daughter of Brooklyn. Someone who learned as a child growing up in New York City to be strong, to be resilient, to take what was thrown at her and then fight back. And she did that fighting for the rights of women. And she did that to ensure that justice would be done by our courts. And she did that to ensure that the Supreme Court would be a place that actually reflected the lives of our people. So we miss her deeply. We're pained by her loss, but we're inspired by her.
Mayor de Blasio. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. BuzzFeed released a huge trove of secret government documents that reveals for the first time how the giants of Western banking move trillions of dollars in suspicious transactions, enriching themselves and their shareholders while facilitating the work of terrorists, kleptocrats, and drug kingpins. And the United States government, despite its vast powers, fails to stop it. Raymond Mazur is a former undercover agent and author of The Infiltrator, My Life as an Undercover Agent, a book now made into a film. He helped in the analysis of the FinCEN files.
The thing that was most troubling to me about these records is that these records related to transactions, some of which happened as long as 14 years ago, some of which has happened as recent as 3 years ago. And unless they are being looked at in the most secret of investigations that the world has ever seen, it certainly leaves room for one to wonder whether or not these hordes of information that are being provided are in fact being welcomed by enough resources for the government to be able to do their job. The other thing that troubles me is that many of these forms were filed 5 years after the transactions occurred. Undoubtedly, because of the fact that the word got out that the matters were being looked at in one way or another, either because of a self-declaring that was being done by a financial institution or because of a government inquiry. So that's troubling. But, you know, the most of all troubling things for me when it comes to the issue of SARS is that what has developed over the last several decades is that the blame for banks being involved in transactions and not identifying seems to have been diverted to the compliance department, who really are trying to figure out the transactions being done on the other side of the bank by the salespeople. And it's pretty simple. This isn't rocket science. If the salespeople genuinely know their customer and genuinely take a reasonable look at the source of the funds, they could be providing the information that would be resulting in the filing of a SAR. But instead, what happens is management at the bank uses a software that they bought as an excuse, because you can't indict software, so it's a good idea to have software to blame, that the software didn't pick it up and that they are now catching on to these things and these things are not going to happen again. But the truth of, and reality of it is you cannot have and there was a bank most recently that I looked into the investigation that related to him called Swedbank in the Baltics. And Swedbank is a huge Swedish bank. And it's impossible for you as an account relationship manager to manage 40% of the deposits that are coming into the bank, which are coming in the name of offshore entities, which you know are being controlled by Russian oligarchs, Russian oligarchs who are affiliated with people who are on watch lists because of their relationship with organized crime. You can't possibly handle that kind of volume of billions and billions of dollars and not realize that these are extraordinarily suspicious and they need to be reported. Roughly 2.4 trillion with a T. Yeah. And of that 2.4 trillion, they estimate roughly 400 billion with a B generated each year from the sale of illegal drugs. If you take a look at the asset forfeitures that are done globally, you can't even attribute 2% of the 400 billion to having been identified and seized.
What should be done about this?
Well, first of all, I'm hoping, and my reason for cooperating with the ICIJ and BuzzFeed was to help them to be very, very specific about what these records show, why it is that it certainly does appear that the government, FinCEN, various law enforcement agencies, and even the financial sector isn't getting it done. It's like the war on drugs. We're just not winning it. And we need to face and look in the mirror and come up with a much better plan. I've written white papers about what I think are the best things that can be done, very few of which are being done. And I just think that we need to be honest. We need to get the public. We need to get Congress. And we need to put a light on this and recognize this is an extremely important thing. I know climate change is extremely important, but this is even more urgent in my view, because these criminal organizations are reaching into the free will of too many elected officials around the globe for us to be able to stand by and let this get any worse.
And that is Robert Maser. He's a former undercover agent and author of the book, The Infiltrator, My Life as an Undercover Agent. He spent 27 years as an agent, 5 years undercover, and he helped in the analysis of the FinCEN files, SARS, S-A-R-S, are reports filed by banks who suspect a transaction may have something to do with money laundering. And Republicans are set to release a report that focuses on Democratic presidential nominee and former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden. This move from the GOP is being done in hopes of putting fresh scrutiny on Biden just weeks before the election. That's according to a report from The Hill. The controversial probe is spearheaded by Senators Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley. It's focused mostly on Obama-era policy and the work done by Hunter for gas company Burisma Holdings. The GOP report is set to be released this week. It's expected to argue that Hunter's work impacted Ukraine policy during Obama's term and created a conflict of interest as the former vice president worked in the area. And finally, New York Attorney General Letitia James warned Monday she's preparing a lawsuit after President Donald Trump's Justice Department labeled New York City an anarchist jurisdiction and threatened to withhold federal grant money. She said in a statement, Trump is trying to distract the American people from his failures as a leader and is using the last few months of his presidency to sow more chaos, more hatred, and more fear. Mayor de Blasio had this to say.
I was out in Elmhurst, Queens this morning. I saw peace, tranquility. I saw people going about their business, people excited that it's the first day of school. I saw anything but anarchy. So this is just another one of President Trump's games. It's thoroughly political. It's part of his campaign strategy. It makes no sense. It's not based in the facts in the least. It's insulting to the people of New York City. And his effort to withhold our funding is unconstitutional.
And that's Mayor de Blasio. And that's some of the news for Monday, September 21st, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson from New York City. I'm Paul D'Arienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.